Hi guys, before we get into today's episode, I wanted to say thank you to Hey Designer for their support of True North. Hey Designer features curated stories for designers and front-end developers. Sign up for their weekly newsletter at heydesigner.com.
Set.
Oh, they're away, and Gatling got away brilliantly, and he's ahead of the field at the moment, and Bolt going very near. Here comes Usain Bolt! Usain Bolt storming through, he takes it again, Blake gets the silver, 9.64! Oh, he's retained his title in the most emphatic way!
To sprint is defined as running at full speed over a short distance. If we prepend the word development, then the definition of a sprint changes to a basic unit of development within the Scrum Agile framework. Now, if we switch out development and instead add in the word design, we have something completely different. A design sprint.
The idea with a design sprint is to get started on a hard problem.
That's Jake Knapp. He's been a design partner at Google Ventures and literally wrote the book on design sprints. The book's name? Sprint.
What we try to do is kind of redesign the work week, and instead of having a bunch of meetings about project A and project B and project C, we just clear the calendar, get a team together in one room, and then on Monday we're making a map of the problem space, sharing information. On Tuesday we're sketching competing solutions. On Wednesday we're making decisions about which of those are the best. On Thursday, building a prototype that's realistic enough that on Friday, we can run 5 one-on-one customer interviews and get some immediate idea of if that idea is something that might work in the real world. So it's kind of a way to get started.
And getting started is exactly what thousands of people around the world have been doing. A quick Google search on design sprints reveals thousands of articles that have been written in response to Jake's book. Medium alone has well over 500 of those. As you begin to wade through the ocean of articles, you start to understand that everyone has their own flavour of sprints. Some authors even seem so enamoured with the concept that it appears that they've skipped the book entirely and Frankenstein their way into something unrecognisable.
I think that, by and large, the stories that I hear are really good. There are people who have run the process more or less the way we describe it, and they get good results. And the challenge, and I think the place where when people take that word, and when I first called it a design sprint, it was something that I knew that within the walls of Google would be a phrase that I thought would you know, catch on with people and sound appealing. The sprint sounds fast, and design, usually the impression of design among engineers, and there's a lot of engineers at Google, is not that it's a fast thing. And so I wanted to upend the way people thought about it. And part of the problem, I think, is that it is a catchy term, and people will sometimes hear that and say, oh, okay, well, we'll do a design thing fast. And we'll, you know, so I've heard of design sprints that are really group brainstorms, and as described earlier, that you know, really makes my flesh go cold. And I've heard of design sprints that are, you know, one day long or 2 days long, and there are problems with that. When you don't go all the way through, when you don't build a realistic prototype, and most importantly, when you don't talk to your customers and show it to your customers and see how they react, then you're missing all of the value of the sprint.
So in an effort to act as supporting material for the book, we're not only going to speak to two of the key members that created sprints, but we're going to hear from someone in the enterprise who managed to run 4 design sprints in 5 weeks and lived to tell the tale. Hi, and welcome to True North. My name is Ben Newton, and I'm from Loop 11. This is the podcast where we share stories of discovery and innovation. To borrow and then paraphrase a quote, since the Sprint book's 2016 release, design sprints have been eating the world. But they aren't inscribed on tablets and handed down from God. They were developed and refined over years of trial and error.
So I ran the first design sprint in 2010, and that was shortly after Michael had joined GV, but we've been kind of talking about this idea of my procrastination, partly as a, you know, as a way for me to grow as a person.
The laugh we hear in the background is the chuckle of Michael Margolis, a UX research partner at Google Ventures and a key member of the team that created design sprints. But for now, back to Jake.
And that idea started in Google. And the first one I ran was with the contacts team on Gmail. Actually, the very first time we ran a sprint, one of the participants, the designers guy, came up with an idea that he prototyped, and then it ended up making it into production. I mean, if you go into Gmail today, and it's a small thing, but if you're looking at a message and you see the contact details on the right-hand side, that came from the very first design sprint. And it actually shipped, which after 0 for 25 on group brainstorm workshops, design sprints were like 1 for 1.
Jake experimented with the process at Google, but then, after 5 years, took a role with Google Ventures to work closely with their portfolio of companies.
What happened right away was that Michael said, look, I've been working with startups for the past 2 years, and I think I can recruit customers and get them to show up on Friday and run an interview, basically get the customer test compressed down so that we can do it in the same timeline as the sprint. And that was really the magic moment for sprints, was when we started to test with real customers on Friday.
So for those of you who've read the book, you'll remember that the whole sprint is geared towards the user testing, which happens on the Friday. Jake says in the book that the interviewer should be impartial and able to take feedback from the participants without any form of bias. This led me to wonder, how involved should the interviewer be in the prior 4 days? Here's Michael explaining his typical involvement within a sprint.
So if I were to just walk in on Friday without knowing what's going on, I wouldn't have been able to, you know, recruit the right participants and prepare the interview guide and all those things. For example, on Monday, if I've done research ahead of time, I'll present the research that we've done ahead of time to kind of feed the sprint and to get people up to speed on that. As we're starting to do the thinking about what's the target that we're going to focus on, who are the key customers or users that we really want to test this with on Friday, what are the criteria for people we're going to include or exclude, so then I can figure out how do I line them up, where do we get them.
Those are a couple of the things that Michael focuses on during a sprint. But by far and away, his most important function is to ensure the sprint generates the answers the team needs.
At the beginning of the sprint, what you're defining as a team is like, these are the set of questions or assumptions that we're trying to answer through the course of this. And so when I work backwards, then I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to have to do these interviews and I'm going to have to make sure we're answering those questions. Like when we're done on Friday, did we answer those questions? So part of what I'm doing also when I'm looking at that storyboard and at that prototype is making sure that there are things in that prototype that will allow me to get the right answers.
So the researcher is a really important role in a design sprint. And as Jake says,
if they're doing their job really well, we'll be keeping the sprint team honest.
Another way Jake has tried to keep sprint teams honest is by creating a comprehensive 15-page checklist. If you're not one for checklists, perhaps a better analogy would be to think of it as a map that helps keep you on track during the course of a sprint.
The idea for the checklist actually goes back to, I remember Michael sharing this article with me earlier in our time at Google. It's this article by Atul Gawande about checklists. And he ended up writing the checklist manifesto, but this was an article in the New Yorker that he wrote. And Michael said, like, you got to check this out. And I remember reading it and thinking, like, oh, this is amazing. Like, this idea of taking the things that we do that are complicated and breaking them into checklists so that you're sure you do all the steps each time really struck me. And it was something that I started to try to do with my own work. And it made its way into the sprint because I realized that idea of breaking down the things you ought to do when you're starting on a big product problem, a big design problem, any kind of business strategy problem, there are things you ought to do that we often don't do when we're working as individuals or teams. And so that's why there's a 15-page checklist in the back of the book, which is, sounds absurd. Like, I mean, we have the snacks you should get and, you know, what time you should take a break to go to the bathroom and everything. But the reason why we do that is because if you follow all those steps, it'll work. And I think that's why the stories of folks who have run sprints since the book's been out have been so great.
The beauty of the checklist is that it's all laid out in front of you, allowing the team to really focus on the problem at hand, which can often be highly complex.
I'll give you an example where we used a sprint for something that was pretty complicated. We were working with Nest before Google acquired them, and they were developing an API. There's all kinds of architecture and information you gotta think through to make an API work well for people. And Michael actually suggested that we think about the problem as a shopping process.
So if you think about the shopping process, essentially for an API, right, the people go through these stages where they're considering it, They're, you know, kind of test driving it. They're building some, and then they're like building an application and then later on kind of maintaining that. So we were mostly focused on that early stage of considering.
And what we found was that in the sprint, if we took a small slice of the website or the API, we thought about where are the developers going to be making those decisions? Where are they going to be considering things? We thought we could potentially, in one sprint, get a good start on the design problem.
Informing the team was some research Michael had done prior to the sprint, which fueled the mapping earlier in the week.
You know, we only mocked up a few screens and hooked them together. And it wasn't the whole story. It didn't complete everything, but it gave us a foothold. It gave us a place to start. And, you know, the Nest team was able to kind of run from that foothold that they got from that first sprint.
As I was preparing for my interview with Jake and Michael, I was reading the Sprint Stories blog. The first article I read blew me away. It detailed a team from AusPost, the Australian equivalent to the US Postal Service, who successfully ran 4 sprints in 5 weeks. The team member who introduced the concept of sprints to the 50,000-person company was Benson Tate. So I packed my microphone and headed into AusPost HQ to speak with him. My first question, why sprints?
Look, we had time pressures. I actually think that's a good thing, to be honest. I think in any good agile project, the variable scope, it's not time. However, we certainly saw an opportunity. So for us to make decisions quickly, a sprint does that. For us to work cross-functionally with multiple heads in the room, like you're talking about engineers and designers and stakeholders, a sprint does that. For us to validate with our customers whether or not we're on the right track and we've provided a delightful experience, a sprint certainly does that. And then surprisingly, actually, I didn't anticipate this, but to get the whole program on board and create a bit of a cultural shift, Sprint did that. We had showcases of over 50 people and a real lot of buy-in into the acceleration that we delivered at. And if you pop up that video of, say, you know, 6 hours worth of user testing into a 5-minute showreel, that is extremely powerful.
What Benson is saying there now has the benefit of hindsight. The success of one sprint, let alone 4, was far from guaranteed. The first hurdle he needed to navigate was convincing stakeholders of the potential value sprints could unlock.
We painted the picture of the opportunity. If we don't do this, this is what will happen. If we don't change, if we don't adapt, this is the output. If we do this, might go backwards. But at the same time, it could go very, very, very fast forward. And it did. I think painting what the opportunity is enough of a carrot to dangle. Having enough buy-in as a team, as a culture, helped a lot. And actually, now that I think about it, we actually didn't underestimate that. We planted the seed 3 weeks before even going hard on it. Then we had to bring in some consultants to help support the space that Neil back to front. We had 3 introductory sessions with the entire team about what our intent is, updates about the pre-planning and where we're intending to go. After the first one, we had a really interesting problem in that we had too many people that wanted to be a part of it.
So Benson and his team put a lot of work into ensuring the broader team and stakeholders understood what was being proposed. In addition to this, within a sprint, you need someone to play the role of decider at certain points. This is often a CEO or general manager level person, but within a company the size of AusPost, getting this type of person to commit to 5 full days was never an option. So instead, they secured proxy deciders. These were people who'd been given the imprimatur for making decisions on behalf of the actual deciders. This ensured the sprint could run smoothly without any bottlenecks. And finally, if anyone had any lingering reservations about leaving their post for 5 days, Benson had a simple yet effective analogy for convincing them.
You know when you're working really, really hard and you're like, oh, I've got too much on and such, and you've got, yeah, you know, you booked the trip because Jetstar was having a deal or whatever, and you're away for a week or two, the place doesn't explode. I kind of sold it like that. So it's like, hey, you're going to be away for a week. You've done it before, it's okay. And I think that when people take that leap, that sense of commitment, it was really hard work. But people came out of it smiling, so that was good.
So with all the right people buying into the idea of sprints, all that's left to do is sit back and wait for day 1 of 5 to start, right?
So the 5 days is definitely a lie. Not in a bad way. So the first thing I'd say is that for every 5 days that you run a sprint, you're actually talking about a week beforehand and a week afterwards. The week beforehand is setting up those intense 5 days. Those 5 days, you don't have any time other than to sprint. So you're booking rooms, you're booking stakeholders, you're booking lightning talkers, you're trying to recruit those users that you intend to validate your assumptions with on the Friday.
Okay, so there's a bit of planning that needs to be considered. And I asked Jake and Michael if there was any value in practicing certain skills before launching into a sprint.
It's really helpful to get some reps in. Some of the exercises, we even talk about how you can use an isolated exercise in a meeting. You can use something we call a note and vote in a meeting. And even just having that idea of someone's going to facilitate this meeting and we're going to follow a structure for the meeting. That's not the way most meetings go. They usually don't have a structure or a facilitator. So going through that process and seeing how it feels, I think helps a lot. Again, one thing that I think is really powerful for a team that Michael will often do in the early days of a project is to run a round of those interviews, even before there's a product, but just to run them on things that are in the space. So show customers products that exist in the same landscape and see who you think your customers are, how they talk about the things that are out there and the solutions that are out there, and get them to talk about what they do today. And of course, Michael's more articulate about this than I am, but that's definitely something you can practice. And both the individuals running those interviews can learn from, but the whole team can learn from the value of that.
So those existing products, I like to think of as free prototypes. And so there's things that you don't have to go through the effort of creating something like your competitors have done it. Look, it's pretty fully functional. It's really high fidelity prototype. Let's just try it and see how do people react to this? What can we learn from it? How do they compare and contrast some variety of them to each other?
Unlike many startups, OzPost had the luxury of a lot of experienced specialists, such as product managers and UX researchers, who could join their teams. With approval received and planning complete, they launched into their first sprint.
So we said we could possibly do 4 and 5 weeks, but we were very open to the fact that if the first one didn't work out, that there's no reason to go and do the others. We were very lucky, however, that the first one did. The first one was loved by the customer, very delightful. The team thought that the practice was fantastic. Funnily enough, the second sprint was actually invalidated by the customer. They didn't actually appreciate the value, and it enabled us to pivot and change direction for the following sprints. For us to be able to pivot in a week was very fast, and if anything, I think probably more valuable than any of the other sprints.
As one sprint followed another, each of the 5 days started to take on their own characteristics. It became clear how each day was related to the next, as well as the challenges each step presented.
On the third day, there's a sort of a period inside the day where you storyboard what it is that you're intending to build. And that is, I think, if anything, it's not more important than the prototype, but if you don't get that right, you waste so much time building that prototype. So getting that storyboard spot on very much supports the Thursday. So get your Wednesday right in order to make sure that your Thursday is not a waste of time. That's a biggie. Friday is probably the most exhausting. You're sitting there listening to users, much as we love them, hour after hour after hour, taking notes and trying to stay switched on. So it's extremely rewarding, but I mean, you've been investing every single minute of your day for 5 days, so you're already pretty tired, and then the last day is asking a lot out of you. So don't underestimate how exhausted you'll be at the end of the week. I think that the first day, I don't know if you'd call it necessarily challenging, but it's certainly interesting considering for a lot of people, this is their first time that they've done this before. And so you are taking a bunch of people that might necessarily have worked together. They're just a bunch of staff members in a room that inevitably by the end of the sprint end up turning into colleagues, which is actually really nice. But you're asking them to really change their perspective on things and how we approach problem solving. So getting people across that line, changing their mindset is quite hard. And then I think it's pretty safe to say it's very personality based. I personally love the Zen voting. When you're deciding what it is that you're intending to go and build, you're looking at all the prototypes. I think Sprint call it the art museum. You know, everyone's really quiet in the art museum. And so you've got your prototypes up on the wall and you've got your dots that you utilize to essentially vote on what it is that's important to you. And in order to support trying to negate an opportunity for groupthink, you do it silently. And for some people, either A, not to sell their idea, or B, not have an opinion on someone else's idea, and all do that in silence, I think around a room was hard. I think it's not a natural thing that people do. I think they just instinctively want to have a conversation.
The other component that became clearer as the sprints progressed was the importance of certain roles. For example, a role which could have been underestimated was that of the prototype creator.
You've only got one day to pull off a prototype, and it's a really short amount of time. So depending on what tool you use, you want to make sure that whoever is your stitcher or prototyper knows that tool back to front, because they don't have time to go and learn it. You've invested now, by that point in time, 4 days, and you've got the customer on the fifth that's coming in. You don't want an unfinished prototype. You want that sort of suspended disbelief. The customer needs to believe so you can get really true, definitive insights out of that.
Benson believes that an inexperienced prototyper can literally undo the otherwise good work done in a sprint, so it's important to get the right person for that role. The final takeaway Benson shared from the AusPost sprints was something that was not included in the book.
It's fascinating to see when you are doing user testing how differently someone can listen, hear, or understand something. And so when you've got a room, a whole team of people that have done a whole design sprint together, listened to the customer in the start, taking their notes and such on that last day, we actually incorporated a retro, to ensure that we're forever bettering what it is that we can do next time, but two, just to get a bit of a sense check as to how we all understood the feedback. And there's a few sort of points where we're like, I understood it this way, or I didn't really get it like that at all. And having that opportunity to have that conversation with the team was really important, because they were all on the same page. And so, the next step from the sprints is really, assuming it's validated, taking it through to delivery. And if you aren't all on the same page by that point in time, then, you need to get there, right?
We've presented a fairly glowing picture of design sprints, but they aren't immune to criticism. Erica Hall of the renowned agency Mule Design wrote a widely read piece on Medium titled Design Sprints Are Snake Oil.
I think that article was, I'm a huge fan of Erica Hall, the author of the Snake Oil article. And so I was pretty flattered that she was even aware that we exist. There's probably, it's probably great news for design sprints that there is enough interest in them, that they spread enough that there's backlash. That's a good thing. But the part of the backlash that, the way Michael described it, I think is right. When people say they're running a design sprint and they do something that isn't the same thing, it erodes the value of the whole notion, just kind of the power of that idea. There's another angle to it, which is I think some people feel that design sprints only work in narrow situations. And it's true that you don't want to use a design sprint for every kind of problem. They really don't work when a problem is too small. There's not a point in clearing your schedule for a week to design, what color button you're going to use. But they are actually, I think, versatile across a wide range of problems. And they're really good for getting people thinking about all of the expertise that exists across their team, not just in one or two folks, and for getting people oriented on the most important moment in their product, when their product touches the customer and how their customers really think about it. And that basic framework is valuable in a lot of different situations. So I think design sprints do work well, and part of the reason it's spreading is because when people do it, that's the experience they have.
To learn more about design sprints or to buy the book, go to thesprintbook.com. That's all the one word. To read more case studies, including that of Australia Post, go to sprintstories.com. For all other links relating to this episode, visit truenorthpodcast.com. And while you're there, you can join the community and find all the episodes from Series 1 and the Master Series. True North is available on Apple Podcasts, where you can subscribe and leave a review. We'd love to hear what you think of the show. Our music is by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. True North is produced by Loop 11. We'll see you next time.